Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
So we left off last week with David and Bathsheba, and David realizing that he is more just like you and me than we ever would have expected. He's, you know, here he goes. He's this guy who's man after God's own heart, and the next thing you know, he's out having an affair with one of his best friend's wives. And so we talked last week, if you were there, about how really the only remedy that God gives for things in the area of sexual temptation is to run, to flee. Run away. I think Alex put a great graphic out on Facebook this past week of the Monty Python's picture, if you saw that. If you go to that verse, one of the many verses that talk about that, like over in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 18, 19, it says to flee sexual temptation. Then right after that it says, the thing about sexual sin is that every other sin you commit is outside your body, but sexual sin is against your own body. And scholars have debated for years what the definition of that is. I remember back when I was in school taking a class on 1 Corinthians, you know, looking and trying to study what the, you know, what that really means. And after, I don't know how long I've been in ministry now, I guess 15 plus years or so. What it does to the body is what you just saw there with Clark. That's what it does. That's what this kind of sin does. It messes with your mind to the point where you think that you can get away with stuff, where you think that you can convince somebody of something that's so ludicrous and so crazy that nobody in their right mind would think like that or talk like that, and it's just ridiculous. And so, but he's sitting there, and sort of the comedy of it, he's poking fun at the fact that people every day think that they're going to come up with some crazy, dumb story to explain away their sin, and somebody's actually going to believe it. And the best line in there, of course, is, you know, yeah, right, Dad. You think Mom's going to buy that? Because you know she's not. And it's just, you're only fooling yourself. So the thing about David, though, is he's just like you and he's just like me, because we all sin, we all fall. James chapter 3, verse 2 says, we all fall in many ways. In other words, there's not just one way, we all fall in many ways. So look to the person next to you and say, you fall. You ain't any better than I am. Yo, I actually got to say it. You fall. You ain't any better than I am. Yeah, because we all fall in many ways. And right when you get to the point where you start thinking that you don't have any sin, bam, all of a sudden it will get revealed to you. And so you got to remember, we all fall in many ways. And the defining mark of your life is not that you fall. Because here's what's so encouraging about David. God says about David in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, there's nobody like him. He's a man after my own heart. And I don't know if it brings any comfort to you, the fact that God would say, this is a guy who's a man after my own heart, with what we just read about him last week. I mean, here is a guy who's at the pit of you know, in our society, the most shameful acts. I mean, this makes tabloids, this makes presidential elections, everything, on both sides, right? So, because it's always something somebody wants to talk about. And yet God says he's a man after my own heart. So here's the thing. We all fall. David fell. The defining characteristic of your life is not that you fall, because we all fall. The defining characteristic of your life is what you do when you fall. How long do you stay down? Do you get back up? What do you do when you're down? Do you do other things that make the whole thing worse? And what we're going to see with David's life is one of the defining aspects of his life is that with this time when he sinned, instead of getting back up and looking to God and getting back on the right path and going the direction he should go, he decides to go the opposite route, like old Clark Griswold there, and decides he's going to try to cover it up. He's going to try to cover it up and figure out how that can go down. So if you're with me and you want to turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 11, we're going to pick up in the story of David here in 2 Samuel chapter 11. And sort of the theme verse that I'll be using as I run through this whole passage is from Proverbs chapter 28, verse 13, that says, he who covers his sin does not prosper. He who covers his sin does not prosper. If you try to cover your sin, you will not succeed. It will not work out the way that you think it's going to. You're not going to be able to convince Rusty and Audrey and your wife that she just happens to be a waitress about to go get you some fish sticks. I mean, it's just not going to come out that way. So it says this. It says that verse 5, it says David gets word that after he had the affair with Bathsheba, he gets word that she's pregnant. So what do you do right there? Be sure your sin will find you out. It's finding him out. The consequences of his actions are catching up to him. And so verse 6, what does he do? It says, so David sent word to Joab. Now Joab is his leading general out in the field. And he says, send me Uriah the Hittite. And Joab sent for him or Joab sent him back to David. Now, you might think to yourself, okay, so what's he going to do? He's sending word to go get, you know, Uriah. This is one of those sort of turning points. You got Uriah coming back, and what should David do when Uriah gets back? Confess. Lay it all out. Here's what happened, man. This is what happened. This went down. I wasn't in a place where I should be. I wasn't in a good place at that time, and I did something I never should have done. I don't know how I can ever ask you to forgive me, but I just want to throw myself at your mercy and ask you to please forgive me, and here's what happened. That's what he could do, but David has no intention whatsoever of doing that because David is off in what I call dreamland. Different psychologists have different terms for it. I just call it dreamland, a fantasy land, whatever you want to call it. Fantasy land just sounds like you're at Disney World, so that's just because I grew up in Florida, that doesn't sound right, but it really is fantasy land. You see, sexual sin is a sin against your own body in that the rationale that it takes to go there in your mind is so severe that once you're there, you have no concept of reality anymore. You see, because when you go to that point where you think that this is an okay thing, because nobody can ever, I'm convinced of this, nobody can commit a sin like this and put their head on the pillow and say, you know, I am a horrible, awful person. No, the mind won't let you think that. At some point, the mind's going to like, well, you're not that bad. I mean, after all, and it'll start coming up with different reasons why you work really hard, you deserve a little release, or, you know, with as difficult as things are, you know, right now, what else do you expect to happen? Or, you know, this was just, you know, the wrong place at the wrong time, and, you know, what's going to happen? I'm only human. Or, well, you know, because of my certain circumstance, this is kind of okay for me because the normal rules don't really apply. Or, well, you know, because of everything that she's not doing right now, or because of everything that, you know, he did to me right now, every single excuse and the rationale just piles up and piles up and piles up. And here's the thing. You're the only one who's going to believe that rationale. Anybody else you talk to doesn't believe it. And I watch couple after couple, or actually usually not couple after couple, it's person after person who's in the midst of this, and they'll sit down with me. And I know they're still in dreamland when they think that they're going to tell everybody about what's going on. Oh, I don't care if it goes public. Once everybody kind of knows it all, they're going to see why I did this. I'm like, nobody else is going to follow your crazy fantasy land logic here, man. They're not. I mean, they're convinced that they're going to sit down with the kids and they're going to spell it all out because they too see how horrible mom is, or they too see how horrible dad is. And, you know, they realize that he's just as bad of a monster as I see him as. And so therefore, they're going to be glad that now they get a better daddy. That's what they're going to think, right? No. They're wondering, what are you doing? Why are you messing up the family? This happens over and over and over again because you're in fantasy land. You don't realize you get so detached from reality. And so here's how detached David is. So he's going to bring Uriah back. And so he, you know, makes a little small talk with him, verse 7. He says, so how's things going out there? How's Joab doing? How are the soldiers out there? How's the battle going? Just, you know, I just brought back one of my most elite. Now keep in mind, Uriah was what was considered David's 30 mighty men. Picture in this sort of in our context, this would be a Medal of Honor winner. This would be somebody who received the Navy Cross. This would be somebody who has a Silver Star. Okay, this is the kind of grouping that this guy is in. He is an elite warrior. If you read about the tales of what these bad dudes did, it goes right up there with any tales of our heroism that we have in our country for what people do. I mean, just crazy stuff going up against all odds. That's what these guys did. So why would you bring this guy back to be a courier to give a message? You don't think he's going to have a suspicion like, what am I doing here? I don't belong here. I mean, there's thousands of messengers who could have come back and told you this. I mean, what's your angle? What's going on here? And so he says, well, yeah, I just want to see how things were going. So why don't you go back to your house and just kind of hang out with your wife. Now, it says in here some euphemisms. It says, go and wash your feet. I'm not going to get into the details of this because this is sort of not really the appropriate. The Bible is not clean enough to be preached on a Sunday morning in American church. I'm sorry. It's just not. There's just too much stuff in there that's just not clean. So I'm just going to summarize it. And if you want to email me later, I can explain to you the details here. Basically, he's saying, why don't you go home and spend the night with your wife? So what's David thinking? You know what he's thinking. He's thinking, okay, I'll get Joab to come back. He'll hang out with his wife. And then in a few months from now, when they all get back from war and there's a baby here, Joab will think that it's his baby and not my baby. And, you know, disregard the fact that the baby looks just like me and looks nothing like him. That's not a big deal at all. This will all work out just fine. Now, think of some other issues here. Think about the math problem here. They don't have Walgreens. They don't have EPT. They don't have, you know, one line, two line. They don't have any of this stuff, all right? So how long is it going to take her to realize that she might be having a baby? 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, at least? Now, if you're going to go to the king with this sort of, I don't know what you call it, accusation or announcement or shocking news, don't you think you're going to want to make sure you're 100% sure of this? Don't you think you're going to be waiting not just 4 weeks, 5 weeks, but maybe six, seven, maybe even 8 weeks now? I mean, like once, you know, kind of two things kind of go around, you finally like, dude, this is legit. This is happening. So let's just say she's about 2 months pregnant when he finds out that she's pregnant. So now he's got to send word via cell phone up to the, via horse and rider at best, to travel all the way out there to track him down, Saving Private Ryan style, okay? And then bring him all the way back, okay? So let's just say at best, we're at the 3 month mark here. At best. This is just assuming things just all happen lickety split here. So at best, we're at 3 months, right? So he's going to go back to war because it's in the early springtime when this all goes down. So he's going to go back to war for a few more months and then come home and have a full-term baby and think it's his? There's only one person in the whole world who thinks this math problem works out. Good talk, Russ. Good talk. Right? That's the only person who thinks this is all going to work out. Nobody's going to raise an eyebrow at this. Nobody's going to wonder why this four-month, you know, premature baby is all of a sudden, you know, 8 pounds, 6 ounces, happy little bouncing boy. And no, your cover-up is not going to work. It never works. Oftentimes people say, well, you know, they wanted to get caught. That's why they got caught. No. They didn't want to get caught. They're just so dumb when they get into this area where they're in fantasy land. They don't have any concept of reality, and they think that they've convinced themselves that all of this stuff is going to work out, that nobody notices anything whatsoever. And so, of course, it's going to get found out because you can't even do simple math, and you think nobody else can do simple math. And so he's thinking this is going to work. And so Uriah, it says, left the palace. And he gets this gift with the king. You know, he sends him with champagne and strawberries, whatever it is, and but Uriah slept at the entrance of the palace with all his master's servants and didn't even go down to his house. And so David was told, hey, Uriah didn't even go home last night. He's like, what? So he brings him back in the next morning. He's like, hey, didn't you just get back from the front lines? Why did you go home? Uriah said, David, the Ark of Israel, the people of Judah, they're all staying in tents. And my commander Joab and the Lord's men are all encamped out in the open country. How could I in my right mind go home and eat and drink and be with my wife tonight? As surely as the Lord lives, I will not do such a thing. Now, it wasn't until I moved here to Virginia Beach that I talked with, the true warriors of our American Armed Forces to really understand this sentiment here. I remember I was just here just a few months, and somebody I'd never met before, they had gotten injured and came home, and I was like, oh, I get to meet your husband. So they come home and, you know, had their knee in a knee brace, and so we got to talking about kind of how things, you know, how that happened and whatnot. He's like, is it going to be serious? You going to be okay? He's like, oh, yeah, I'll be fine. And he was just frustrated that he was here the whole time. He just had this, like, every time I saw him, he was just angry. And so I was like, you know, hey, you know, this is a good thing. You know, you get to get out of deployment, you know, you get to come home, hang out. Your knee's going to be fine. It's going to be a little rehab. And he's like, yeah, I just don't want to be here. I need to be over there. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, it just, you know, just a thought. If something happens while I'm not there, I want to be back, and I'm hoping they'll just send me back so I can just finish out deployment, do whatever I can over there, and then come back. I didn't understand it. I didn't understand at the time. The longer I've been here, the more I've talked with guys, I begin to understand this isn't a modern thing. This is a 3,000-year-old plus warrior mentality. When you have that sense of brotherhood and teamship and camaraderie amongst the people that you're fighting alongside, you understand that my presence puts them in a weakness. And you don't want to leave your brothers in a weak place or in a weak state. And so the very thought that he would get to go, that he would have to go back and be like, hey, where you been? Oh, I've just been hanging out, partying with my wife. No, I'm not doing that. I'm not that guy. And so he says, I'm not going there. I'm not going to do that, David. I mean, you got to be crazy. I was just, come on. You know how it is, or at least you used to know how that is back when you went out to fight with us, David. And so he says, I'm not going out there. So David's like, okay, well, all right, how about this? Just stay one more day, and then I'll send you back. So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. And at David's invitation, he ate and drank with him. And David made him drunk. But in the evening, Uriah went out to sleep on his mat amongst his master's servants, and he did not go home. So, you know, David's thinking, okay, sober, he's in his right mind. What if I get him wasted? If I get him wasted, he'll have his defenses down. He'll certainly, at that point, you know, stupor home. And, you know, at least Bathsheba, maybe she knows what to do once he gets there, right? What the text is trying to say, listen, your brain will be more jacked up when you're in the midst of this kind of sin than you would be if you were wasted on alcohol. That sin is more intoxicating and more detrimental to your judgment than alcohol is. Do you see what the text is trying to point out? It's very clearly saying, listen, even drunk, he's in his right mind. But David, drunk with his own sin, drunk with his own lust, drunk with his own cover-up, he's out of his mind. And he's got all these crazy concoctions he's trying to work out and see if it could work out somehow. So it says, in the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab, and he sent it with Uriah. So now Uriah's like, okay, maybe this is the reason why I was brought back. You know, there's this top secret message that's got to be delivered back. And of course, he wants an elite warrior to come back to take this letter off to the front lines and make sure nothing happens to it. So, okay, that would be why maybe that is that I came home. Because up until now, he's like, what on earth am I even doing here? So he says, he writes a letter to Joab and he sends it to Uriah. And in it, he wrote, put Uriah out in front where the fighting is fiercest and then withdraw from him so he'll be struck down and die. Nice guy, huh? So while Joab had the city under siege, he put Uriah at a place where he knew the strongest defenders were. Then the men of the city came out and fought against Joab, and some of the men in David's army fell. And moreover, Uriah the Hittite died. So there it is. Another characteristic of this is that sin is like a snowball going downhill, just getting faster and faster. Decisions are coming so quick you can't even keep up with, you know, the logic behind them or what would be a wise thing to do in the situation, and the sin gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It just keeps growing. The longer this whole thing carries out, and the longer you delay confessing, the longer you delay getting all right with God, just the worse everything gets and the bigger all this stuff gets. You see, when you think about how this whole thing started, David thought that his problem was fatigue, so he decides he's going to take a season off from going out to war. And then he thinks that his problem is boredom, or perhaps maybe the lack of his desires being fulfilled with whatever he's got going on. So he brings Bathsheba back and they end up having an affair. And then he thinks that his problem is her pregnancy. And so he brings Uriah back to see if he can kind of cover that up. And then when that doesn't work out, he thinks that his problem is Uriah. So he has him killed. And it makes you kind of wonder just, okay, when is this all going to end? I mean, how far is this going to go? How far is this going to keep going and going and going? Is there no end to how deep this hole is going to get? Is there no end to the levels at which you will stoop and which you will go? And people all the time just say, I can't believe they did this, or I can't believe they would do such a thing. This isn't the person that I knew. Here's the thing. This isn't the person anybody knew when it comes to David. Okay, this isn't David. But when you put somebody in this situation where they've sinned against their own body and their mind is not in a healthy place where it cannot think straight, you know better. That's what you said. Remember you said earlier? You're no better than me. You do it too. We all sin. We all fall in many ways. And when you fall in this way and you fall in this category specifically, you go down, down, down in a burning ring fire. Yeah, yes. So, yeah. So if you pause for a moment, you might think to yourself, okay, well, let's just stop, you know, with the David thing. Why would Joab in his right mind do this, okay? I mean, why would Joab get this message? You know, okay, here he is, one of David's Medal of Honor, Silver Star winners, or recipients, I should say. They're not winners, they're recipients. Why would he be willing to go along with taking this war hero, this one who has fought on David's side for year upon year upon year, probably 20 years or so of service to him at this point? Why on earth would he carry this whole thing out? Well, for that, you need to know a little about Joab. If you want to know a lot about Joab, pick up the latest copy of my new book that I wrote with Ryan Murnane called Ethics. No, I'm sorry. I've always wanted to do that, but I don't actually want you to go buy the book. I just always want to do that because I always see these pastors always doing it. So we wrote a book, sorry, I had to do that just for my own, just to say I've done it at some point in my life. You ever go to those churches where they're always like, now back in the bookstore, I've got this series that I wrote. You with me on that? Sorry. Anyways, but Joab, this story has been so fascinating to me that I've always wanted to study it further, and so Ryan and I, this past year, we did this thing with Regent University to write that whole thing out. But You go back in Joab's life. Joab commits four murders that are recorded in Scripture. This is one of those four murders, okay? This is the third of his four murders. So that's already the kind of guy you're dealing with to begin with. When you look at Joab, he's an opportunistic kind of guy. He will stop at nothing to gain leverage on somebody. He will stop at nothing to gain influence on somebody. He is kind of like a Chuck Colson figure, not the Chuck Colson who started prison ministries. I'm talking to Chuck Colson back in the Nixon era, who was known as the, anybody? The Hatchet Man. Gosh, you guys are really young. Back in the day, Nixon had his henchmen or his hatchet men, the ones who carried out the whole Watergate thing. And you wanted something done, no matter how unethical it was, he went out and did it. I'm sure that none of our politicians ever since have ever had anybody like that on their staff. But back in the day, that's what Chuck Colson was. That's who Joab was for David. When David had anything he wanted done, no matter how low it was, he knew this guy didn't have the ethics to put any brakes on anything. As a matter of fact, what he knew about Joab is he would carry it out, but he knew there'd be a price. You with me on this? You know those kind of people? You know, they'll do what you ask them to do, but you know at some point you're going to have to pay the piper for it. And what we do in our sin, and I see this happen over and over and over and over again, it's ridiculous. In your sin, the people you need to go to is a Jonathan. Remember when David had a friend like Jonathan? And it said David was in a bad place. And it says, and Jonathan strengthened his hand in the Lord. Remember that? And when David was going nowhere fast, and he was kind of really discouraged and about to make some really bad decisions, it says Jonathan came to him and he strengthened his hand in the Lord. He got him back on the right path. If only right now David would call up a friend like Jonathan. Okay, and there's one out there. We're going to find him about him next week. If only he would call that guy up and say, listen, I'm in a really bad place. I'm doing some really dumb things. I don't know what's going on. My life is spiraling out of control. What do I do? That guy could have got him back on path, strengthened his hand in the Lord. Instead, no. What does he do? Because he's so messed up in his thinking, he goes and finds what I call a mutually facilitating friend. You know those friends. You know those friends. They're usually somebody you're trying to minister to, somebody you're trying to reach out to, somebody you used to know, somebody from where you used to work, or maybe somebody who works in your place now. They're kind of messed up, but they're still a friend of yours. But you know better than to like ask them for advice because they're a moron. So, but when you're in this situation, you walk in and you go, so yeah, I'm thinking about leaving him. What do you think? I think that's a great idea. Yeah. Do what you feel is right for you, you know? Whatever's right in the moment, whatever you need to do, you know, whatever. You know those friends. Those friends will help facilitate whatever stupid, idiotic, cover-up, sinful lifestyle decision you want to make, right? You with me on this. And you'll go and you'll find that person to your own detriment. And that person will only help you carry your things out one step farther. Instead of strengthening your hand in the Lord, they just kick you right down the gutter and let you go. And so that's who Joab was. And says, and so David gets this note back a little while later. It says, and so Joab sent David a full account of a battle. And it says, he instructed the messenger, listen, when you finish giving the king the account of the battle, his anger may flare up at you and ask you, why did you get so close to the city to fight? Don't you know they'd shoot down arrows at the wall? Who was it that killed Abimelech, son of were you all so close that a woman would drop a millstone on his head so that he died there in Thebes? Why'd you get so close to the wall? And if he asks this, just say to him, hey, Uriah died also. Now, if you read about the account of the battle, first of all, when they do this whole pullback maneuver, Uriah's not the only one who dies. Other people die too. And then, Joab, we don't know anything about this Abimelech. We went through and studied to see if we could find anybody. There's nothing else about this guy. One of two options probably present itself out there. Either he was just happened to be collateral damage, of the whole thing. When they pulled back, that happened. More likely, if you know Joab, more likely he's somebody that Joab had an axe to grind with. Joab had a track record of people who were in his way of mowing them down. You're in my way. You're trying to come up against me. I'll make sure that you die on the next battle. And he probably had a situation with this guy because he was a close friend and ally of David's. And so he didn't know how to get rid of him. So this little death note for Joab was just the opportunity, wasn't it? Okay, yeah, I'll take care of him. And I'll do it right around the same time that I bump off the guy who's one of my political enemies too. And so when David gets the note back, here's the thing. Sin that has covered up multiplies consequences. Sin that is covered up just multiplies the consequences. Sins that is covered up just multiplies the consequences. So when you first start off, okay, you have an unwanted pregnancy, okay? But you could deal with that, right? You could work through that. You could deal with that. It's not a big, I mean, people think it's this major thing, but listen, you can work through this, okay? You could get over that hurdle. But okay, then next, you got this whole big cover up. You got this whole big scheme. And we all know usually the cover up is far worse than the crime, isn't it? So you got this whole cover up. You got this whole ruse. How mad do you think Uriah is going to be, you know, 6 months later when, you know, she has this full-term baby and he sort of puts two and two together and he does the math and figures out what all happened? How do you think he's going to feel once he realizes he's been duped? How do you think that conversation is going to go? It just multiplies the consequences exponentially. So now you've got the situation where David has carried out a murder via Joab. But on top of that, it's also cost him the life of one of his close friends, Abimelech, plus several other of his fighting men. See, the consequences just keep growing and growing and growing the more you cover things up. And then lastly, sin will numb you to the consequences. You know, so here it is. You know, you would think, you know, Joab's expecting, you know, this Abimelech guy's, I'm guessing from the text. I mean, clearly, you know, when you tell him that Abimelech's dead, David's going to be ticked off. That's what he says. So I would deduce from that that this guy's probably a close friend of his in some way, shape, or form. And so you would expect in a normal situation, if David was thinking clearly, he'd be angry. So you're expecting that response. What happens? David told the messenger, tell us to Joab, don't let this upset you. You know, the sword devours one as well as the other. Just keep on working at it. Yeah, war is war. Things happen, you know, people die every day. Okay. That's his reaction to a close friend of his dying right there. Why? Because sin numbs you to the consequences. And I see so many people, when they see the consequences piling up, they just go, yeah, so. It's like, you realize the road you're headed down. Yeah, so. You realize you're only going to be seeing your kids like every other weekend. Yeah, so. You realize your pay is going to be cut in half. Yeah, so. You realize you could lose your job over this. Yeah, so. They just get completely numb to the circumstances. And David at this point is just numb to the consequences and the circumstances he finds himself in. He's not even angry over a friend dying. All he cares about is, okay, my sin's covered up. It's all good. Nobody's going to find out. Who cares what the cost is? And you're in a bad place. So see, who covers up a sin does not prosper. He who covers up a sin does not prosper. When Uriah's wife heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. And after the time of, I'm just going to throw in there, public mourning was over, David brought her to his house and she became his wife. And they had a baby together. You know, so David gets to ride in as this magnanimous, well, you know, since this poor widow here is great with child, I should just take her into my home to do the, you know, the loving thing, the caring thing for my friend and bring her back with me. And I can, you know, save face in front of the whole nation and just be a good guy through it all, right? Because everybody's going to buy that story. And the last line is, but the thing that David had done and displeased the Lord. You know, you can fool a lot of people. You can't fool God. And the crazy thing is when you get to this point, you actually think you fooled God. You actually think the blessing of God is upon you because God's hand has not come upon you yet in judgment. You think that the longer you're getting away with it, the more God must be okay with it. And I see people do that all the time. Like, well, you know, this person just wasn't the right person for me. They just, you know, clearly they weren't my soulmate. And this person over here clearly is. And God's just working everything out to make it all happen. And I'm like, excuse me? You want to bring God into this? You really think God's a part of this whole, oh yeah, yeah. And they'll start quoting off Bible verses, talking about how these two people pray together and how they want to start going to, and I'm just like, the thing that you're doing, scripture says, is displeasing to the Lord. And just because his hand of judgment has come upon you, that's his grace, not his condoning. There's a big difference. There is a huge difference. And don't ever take the grace of the Lord for granted. And many of you right now in this room, you are taking the grace of the Lord for granted. And we're going to find out next week. Be sure your sin will find you out. That's what's coming up next week. Nathan's going to show up, and it's not going to be pretty. He who covers a sin does not prosper. But if I finish out that verse in Proverbs, it says, but the one who confesses and renounces finds mercy. But the one who confesses and renounces finds mercy. yeah, but I just don't know, Steve, how I can stop going down this path. Just stop. The further you go, the worse it's going to get. But yeah, if I say something now, if I confess this now, it's going to be bad. It's only going to get worse. You are only going to get worse. David's condition emotionally, stress-wise, spiritually, health-wise is going down and down and down. The consequences of his actions are going up, up, up. You can look at any point in the story and say that the sooner he quit this whole thing, the better off he would be, right? But some of you right now are not convinced of that. You're convinced you're just one or two more lies away from skating by with this. If you cover your sin, you will not prosper. But if you confess it and renounce it, you'll find mercy. Will you join with me as we pray? Father, my hope this morning right now, Lord, that I would just be able to partner with you in some way to penetrate through hard hearts in this room. To penetrate through hearts that are numb. Numb to consequences of sin, numb to the reality of the path that they're on. Father, for us, it's so easy just to go down this road of cover up and cover up and cover up and assume that it's your grace that is what's getting us by right now. We need to acknowledge right now, Father, what we are doing is displeasing to you. And because of your great love, you will not let it continue forever. So today, Lord, if we hear your voice, if we sense your spirit moving us, may we confess. May we repent. And leave here walking down a different path. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.